From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There was a time, about 5 minutes ago it seems, but really 5 years and 50 years ago, when taking a photograph entailed a broad stripe of mystery, of not knowing quite what would come out when the role of film went to the developer. The explosive rise of digital photography has changed all that. By the end of this year, more than 50% of American households will own a digital camera. Over 80% of new cameras sold are digital. American consumers are expected to make 7.7 billion prints of digital photos this year, and maybe twice that number. Memory cards bring us instant gratification on what to keep and what to discard. Gigabytes of storage give us the ability to shoot thousands of photographs, and many do, instead of just rolls of 24. The end result? A torrent of pictures that can be emailed to distant relatives, displayed in virtual galleries, or forgotten on a computer hard drive. This hour on Point, the onslaught of digital photography and what it means for how we make and keep images and memories. You can join the conversation. Are you part of the digital imaging tidal wave? Is your digital camera changing the way you take, use, and value photographs? Is it changing the raw material of your memory? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Jackson, Michigan, is Gary Pajot, a group executive of the Photo Marketing Association, a trade group representing retailers, processors, and photographers. Gary, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So give us the numbers here first. It was only a few years ago that this was a marginal activity. It just seems a handful of years. It has become the way Americans take photographs.
Oh, certainly. I think that the advantages of digital photography have far surpassed the disadvantages that were present only a few years ago. For example, 10 years ago, you could buy a digital camera, but it was very expensive, and you couldn't really make very good prints out of it, and they were very difficult to use.
It's being described as the fastest adoption of new technology in history. We have a few of the numbers there at the top of the show, but what do you see when you look out across the landscape? The people you represent really care about who's using what and how they're using it. What are some of the numbers that indicate the growth of digital photography?
Well, you mentioned one thing, which was digital prints, but we're tracking consumer printing at about 7.7 billion digital prints. That still means that people are shooting analog. I mean, there's still about 18 billion analog prints being made.
Mm-hmm.
So analog and film are not going away. In fact, single-use cameras are still continuing to take a larger and larger share of the film marketplace. So I think the people who want to enjoy film can, but certainly the momentum is going strongly towards digital photography. What's kind of changing is the way people are interacting with their pictures and how they're using them to get prints. For example, online photography, where you can upload pictures to a website and then print them, is growing. Also, retail printing, where actually you're kind of taking the old analog process of what used to be the idea of a roll of film and continuing that, where you actually take the memory card in a store and getting prints.
Mm-hmm.
And there we're talking explosive growth rates. Overall, prints from digital cameras through May of this year are up 62%. So we're really seeing a lot of growth there. Unfortunately for the industry, what's happened, though, is the overall print market hasn't really grown, because what's happened is people make the transition from film to digital. They are being more selective about what they print.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Do you have any numbers on that? Any sense of, we all remember the old days. You shot the roll of film, and you had to take it in and get it all developed, even if you expected there might only be a couple of great shots on there. Now, what portion of digital frames shot are actually being printed out on paper anywhere?
Well, like I said, we're seeing 7.7 billion digital prints. We're also estimating for this year another 12.3 billion images are not printed at all. So really what we're seeing there is either the people are choosing not to print them because they really didn't intend to print them anyway. They just wanted to share, an image or an experience where they're taking a picture, or they're even using it to communicate, hey, honey, here's the chair I saw at the store. Do do you think this will go in their living room? You know, that kind of communication with pictures.
But if there are 7.7 printed and 12.3 not, that's actually more being printed than I might have guessed. I mean, it's almost, what, one in three or something like that, still being put on paper.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, printing is still growing, but still there's a lot of people who have good intentions who are not printing at all. And where we're seeing a flattening in the overall print market is the people who are, you know, when you would shoot a roll of 24, really only a 6 or 8 of those are really keepers. And the other 10 or 12 or so were marginal at best, and you probably would not choose to print them. And right, that's what's happening now. People are taking those pictures, but they're choosing not to print them. So really, you know, for the consumers, you know, digital printing is certainly a great value because you're really printing what you want. And you're not actually paying for what you don't intend to.
You end up wondering what gets lost, what gets discarded that might have sat in a big box in the attic before and pulled out later, prints that didn't look like what you wanted on the day you shot them or developed them that later end up being important to a family or to the realm of memory. The industry implications here have been enormous. We see Kodak laying off wave after wave of employees. Just a couple of weeks ago, they announced layoffs of another 10,000. Are American firms going to be lead players in the digital photography industry, or is that not on?
Well, I think, you know, the photo industry has traditionally been very international anyway. You've got most of the hardware companies, the manufacturers have been, you know, the Japanese and German companies. Kodak, of course, is among the leaders in that. So, you know, the photo industry has always been, exposed to that. You have Japanese manufacturers who are making the processing equipment. That's in almost every retail store. So, you know, that's one side of it. The other side of it is if you look at it from the computer industry, the people who are getting involved in photography. For example, Hewlett-Packard is a very large U.S.-based company who is very, very involved in photography. They're one of the top brands now in digital cameras, and they were not a part of this industry a short time ago. So, you know, from a U.S. standpoint, there's probably more activity than there had been traditionally.
And next comes camera cell phones, 150 million sold globally last year, and the expectation of much more to come then, making photography really kind of ubiquitous because it's digital photography, because it's so portable. Gary Pajot, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Portland, Oregon, Christopher Burkett. He's a nature photographer. He uses only film for his work. He's been a photographer for the past 30 years. Christopher Burkett, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Love to get your sense of how people's experience of photography is changing with this huge shift to digital photography. We understand you're sticking with film, but you must look around and see what's going on. Do you see a change in the fundamental relationship between people and films and the frames, the photos that they take?
Well, yeah, I think there is. And actually, I'm really glad you're having this conversation because it's not a topic that's usually discussed, and I think the whole perception of photography is changing, and people are seeing it more as a disposable medium. It's so easy to take all those digital pictures and hit the delete button or, like you were saying, put them on your hard drive, and, it's not uncommon to see somebody that's taken 2,000 pictures in a week.
And that is a huge number. You know, a couple of years ago on the show, we had Susan Sontag. Of course, she's passed on since then. We'd so love to have her with us this morning. But she famously wrote in her long essay on photography years ago that photographs alter and enlarge our notions of what is worth looking at and what we have a right to observe. Do you see that sense changing, Christopher Burkett, as people have that ubiquitous camera, as you say, as they just shoot more and more?
Well, yeah, I think so, because As Susan was saying, photography is all about seeing, and good photography is about seeing well. And it's very difficult to get an image that's really worthwhile, and simply by going out and shooting more and more photographs or even making the process easier doesn't necessarily make better. Well, in fact, it actually is counterproductive to making better images.
And when the images are so numerous and so many of them can sit on the hard drive and be almost forgotten, I know you're in the business of capturing nature, but for many American families, cameras are about capturing memory. And I wonder if that understanding of memory, that grasp on memory, is enhanced or diminished when we move to this ubiquity of photographs.
Well, boy, it's the problem is, of course, is that we never know what photographs is. Sometimes we don't know which photographs are going to be really memorable. In other words, you have an anniversary party or birthday and you take pictures of everybody's there and, you know, a year and a half later your uncle dies or something like that. And you go, normally you go through your box of prints and you pull out the ones of Uncle Frank and there they are. But of course, with digital, you may have easily deleted those pictures, or they may just be buried on tens of thousands of images on your hard drive and even difficult to recover.
Gary, you know, of course, lots of people with have old snapshots, paper snapshots at home sitting in boxes too, unfiled and maybe more difficult to retrieve than a digital photo. So what about those, the great sort of surplus of photos, more accessible in the digital era or lost, deleted?
Well, certainly, from one standpoint, they're far more accessible because you have, you know, a tangible, visible way of searching and finding them. I mean, that certainly is, you know, can't be disputed. The only issue you have is that that's the only copy in existence in most cases, where in the digital world, you can have multiple copies of the same images residing in different places. So, yeah, I mean, it is a big concern for the industry as a whole that people are storing their precious memory on a hard drive that there may or may not fail or is susceptible to spyware, adware, and any number of viruses. So that is a big concern. That's why you'll start seeing soon services that will help consumers preserve their memories.
For a long, long time on those pixeled images. Gary Pageau, Christopher Burkett, please stand by. We're talking this hour about the onslaught of digital photography and how it's changed the way Americans take, use, share, and value pictures. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. How is your experience of photography and memory changing? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the onslaught of digital photography and how it's changing the way we make and keep memories. You can join us. Has the pixel era changed your relationship with photographs and photography? Has digital photography changed the way you use the camera, the frequency, the subjects, the weight of the photographic moment? And do you take a million shots and never look back? Are all those digital moments just sitting on your hard drive? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined this morning from Jackson, Michigan by Gary Pageau. He's with the Photo Marketing Association. From Portland, Oregon by Christopher Burkett, a nature photography photographer for the last 30 years who uses only film in his work. And right now from Williamsburg, Virginia by Dr. Ellen Rudolph. She's a psychologist and photojournalist. She's had pictures published in many outlets, New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, all over. Ellen Rudolph, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
So here we are, and the ghost of Susan Sontag is sitting very much in this conversation with us. We began the hour by quoting her saying that the camera is the ideal arm of consciousness in its acquisitive mood. She said that the most grandiose result of the photographic enterprise is to give us the sense that we can hold the whole world in our heads as an anthology of images. Ellen Rudolph, as digital cameras become ubiquitous and people take so many more pictures all over the place, maybe we are actually pulling the whole world as images into our virtual mind.
Well, I think in a way that's true, actually. What I see happening is that digital photography is becoming another form of communication, not just words, not just a photograph that we look at, but we are now being interactive with images in a way that is stirring the hearts of small children and elderly people alike.
You've got websites like Flickr.com where
right.
People put up photographs that they've taken around themes. And we've seen very quickly, for example, after the bombings in London, boom, there's a collection of photos that ordinary people put there right on down the line when there's a crisis or something. The Live Aid concerts, boom, we're not waiting for Life magazine. It's ordinary people
exactly.
with digital photography creating that kind of communal memory, you're saying.
And they're investing in that art of communication, this new art of communication. I have children from around the world who email me all the time. I have teachers and grandparents who email me and you know, tell me that they are just absolutely thrilled by their digital cameras.
And yet, Christopher Burkitt, one can't wonder, help but wonder if there's a trade-off here between the breadth of what's being photographed and somehow the depth, if these become like disposable images at some level.
Well, I think that's true, but it is a good point that digital is really a new medium, and I think that that's a very good distinction to make, because so often it's viewed as replacing film, and they're really two different things.
When you pick up a camera, Christopher, in your work, you use film normally. You must have tried it with digital photography. What's the difference in the experience of shooting and in the end product, the end images you develop?
Well, it is totally different. I primarily use an 8x10 view camera, so you're starting with an 8x10-inch piece of film, which has tremendous image quality. And, of course, that's a whole different process, setting up a view camera. And also, I'm very selective in what I photograph, so I may go on a trip for 6 weeks and drive 10,000 miles and take maybe 50 photographs, tops. And,
that's the opposite of the digital dynamic.
Yeah, it's exactly opposite. And but, again, it's all about careful seeing and trying to get a special image that's going to have lasting impact. And that is a very contemplative process that I don't think is enhanced by digital photography.
Why not? Why couldn't you be equally contemplative with the latest digital whiz-bang camera in hand?
Well, you certainly could in theory, but remember, each process has its own impact upon the final result. So you can't really separate the process from the final product. Digital is immediate. It's got the instant feedback. It's superb for many, many applications, but not for something like I do.
And what about the image that you end up with from film versus the digital image? Of course, not every snapshot at a family birthday party is treasured for the depth of its quality as an image, but mm-hmm. but how do you see the difference in what can be achieved with the two different technologies?
Well, especially using, again, large format film, and then I do all my own printing very carefully. In fact, I spend most of my life in the darkroom making my own prints and agonizing over them and, fine-tuning them. And without a doubt, there's no way you can get that type of image quality with digital. So it's really, again, a different medium.
You've written that a snapshot, even a snapshot, digital produces more poorly. You say, my friends send me their snapshots on digital, and for me, it's like biting into a piece of aluminum foil. Is it really that bad?
Well, I'm afraid so, but, unfortunately, a lot of even snapshot digital prints are much poorer in image quality than even a disposable camera. I think that's one of the reasons Gary was pointing out that the market for disposable cameras has actually increased.
Mm, people buying them, using them once, developing the film, and the camera goes away.
Right, but actually the snapshots are high quality. Again, I'm trying to emphasize that there's a difference in the medium. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but better for certain applications.
Ellen Rudolph, we love your combination as a psychologist and a photojournalist. Have you sat and thought about the mindset of people when they come to record images with a digital camera versus the old mechanical analog film-bearing camera? Is there a different approach?
Well, I think there is. People are, by the millions, are becoming photojournalists. They're documenting the moment. They're participating in an event when it happens. It's a very different way of being in the world. What Christopher is doing is, wonderful stuff. The average person can't go there, doesn't even want to go there. He's documenting the earth, really, for us and for perpetuity. But the digital domain is bringing, even just from a conservation perspective, it's bringing every person with a small camera into the environment and documenting what's happening out there. So I see, giving kids cameras a great thing. They're telling us about the world. They're participating in the world in a way that they never have been able to before.
Susan Sontag said that taking a photograph was not just an act of recording. It was almost always interpretive. In the way that people have always been interpretive. I mean, she wrote this great line. She said, "Humankind lingers unregenerately in Plato's cave, still reveling its age-old habit in mere images of the truth, but being educated by photographs," from Sontag, she says, "is not like being educated by older, more artisanal images, those of the painter or the engraver." So I wonder, even at this divide between digital photography and film photography, Ellen, if you find people are bringing less artistry, less interpretation, a more strictly recording eye to the images that they're capturing.
Well, they're bringing a recording eye, but the bonus behind that is that it brings them immediately into the scene. A still photograph that somebody else takes does not do that in the same way. I prefer, as a conservation photographer, I prefer that the public get involved in the image, in the scene. I want them, you know, they all can't afford to get on a plane and go to Ecuador or, you know, or someplace else in the world, but they can show us from Ecuador or from Peru or from Australia what's going on in their backyards, and we all need to know those things. So it's like talking about apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. I think really it's a lovely thing for the average person to get involved in. A young friend of mine from Australia is 13. He is big into water sports of all kinds, and he makes the most amazing photographs. And but he's there, and he's taking them. He straps his photograph to his camera to his belt, and he takes them when he's turning midair, you know. And I mean, these are thrilling photographs. Yeah. It makes me, when I look at them, me wish I were there.
It sometimes seems these days that everything is being photographed all the time. Gary Pageau, we're hearing digital photography described in a way as a new medium, less about creating images for the image, and almost more about a new language emerging here, an image language, a means of communication in a stream rather than single image by image.
Certainly, and I think part of what the difference of what Christopher does is, and from what I've heard from other, you know, artists of that caliber, is really there's a great deal of pre-visualization of the image when they go out to the field, and they've already, you know, they're working to expose that sheet of film, and in their mind they've already designed how that exposure is supposed to look. You know, they may be exposing for highlights or mm-hmm. for shadow detail or whatever. So there's a great level of pre-visualization. On the opposite end is of the digital spectrum is, you know, I'm just going to snap away like a maniac and put everything on a Flickr and let the public decide what's worthwhile. Mm. So there's almost this democratization of imaging. And,
yeah, but
they're all valid. It's just the access was never there before.
Ellen?
Yeah, I would say I would use the term a new way of being in the world. It's not just snapping thousands of pictures. I mean, it's like they're growing a third arm. Mm-hmm. And they're being in the world in a different way. And we know that a photographer looks at the world more closely with greater detail than a person who isn't a photographer.
And yet, I can't help wonder, Ellen, I'm hearing this described. I mean, Christopher Burkett writes, he says, sometimes people don't even make prints. They just email. It's, mm-hmm. it's even lower quality, mm-hmm. just a screen image. It's less permanent, less tangible. You take a quick look, hit delete, and move on to the next fleeting experience. This, to me, dovetails with what you're saying. The image becomes almost like a single word in an ongoing conversation, much less like a painting that you're going to sit and look at for a long time. And that's where I wonder about the connection to memory. Have images become the analog of words instead of the painting, the memory?
Well, could I add something to that?
Please.
I would take the 13-year-old in Australia. He's going to hang a picture that he took of him upside down in the waves and put it on his living room wall. He's not going to take the absolutely most beautiful photograph of Yosemite National Park and put it on his wall, probably, because he was there and his heart was in it at the very moment that he clicked that shutter button. So in some ways, it does people keep in print what is meaningful to them.
And yet you've got this overall stream of images that's less captured and more about flow, more about almost of the visual counterpart of the word.
Well, it's like
speech.
The difference between a conversation and reading a book.
Yeah, yeah.
A conversation is dynamic. It flows.
And now with the digital cameras everywhere, images serving both roles. We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. I want to begin to turn to them. David is calling from Los Angeles. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi.
I think the conversation is very stimulating. I just want to describe an experience I recently had, which tells you about the efficiency of digital photography. I took my kids on a cruise without my wife, and as a surprise, we brought home a completed photo book from the experience. We had the pictures developed on board and came home with a wonderful scrapbook that was completed by the time we walked in the door.
Amazing. So no waiting, no taking the film down to the corner store. And having gone on a cruise without your wife, you probably needed some offering to make when you walked through the door.
Exactly correct. We went into the Caribbean. I had a little Elf camera with me. We got some incredible pictures, one of which I think my wife wants to use as this year's Christmas card. But I also want to mention that when I walked in the door, I walked in the bedroom and took a long look at a beautiful Elliot Erwitt black and white photograph that I purchased for our first anniversary. And I think there are two levels. You know, one is sort of a pragmatic craft, and the other is that people like Elliot Erwitt are artists, and both have a place, in my opinion.
So when you look at the digital film divide, you see sort of two emerging genres, two uses of the image itself, approaches to the image.
Exactly. I mean, I love black and white photography. For me, I collect black and white photographs. I wouldn't really purchase a color photograph. And what I take has nothing to do with what I collect, but it is an incredibly emotional and immediate experience.
David, thanks so much for calling in from L.A. We're glad you survived the homecoming from the cruise with the offering of the scrapbook. Let's get another call here. Jill is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Jill. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm a documentary photographer. I work in black and white. I work in medium and large format.
Mm.
And I also shoot digitally for exactly the kind of things that are either family or throwaway or whatever. I have a really fine little digital camera. It makes wonderful prints. I do all the printing myself, however, so I'm not one of these people who helps the photo industry anymore.
Right.
In black and white, I am composing the way Burkert is talking about. I am doing that. A photograph may take me a half an hour or an hour. And so I'm sort of straddling both worlds, and I mourn what appears to be the passing of the black and white. But what I really wanted to say was that if you read the history of photography and you read the things that painters, for instance, had to say about photography as it came in, it was almost this exact discussion.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Susan Sontag writes, from its start, photography implied the capture of the largest possible number of subjects. Painting never had so imperial a scope. So here we are making that step again, do you think, Jill?
Yes, I think that we are. And I think that rather than than it being a new art, which I don't really think it is, I think it's just more of a democratization of the medium. And yes, people take millions of pictures and throw them away, but my parents took millions of pictures and threw them away too.
Right.
Just your old film cameras. And I have thousands, literally thousands of images that I have not looked at since I was 15 years old.
Sitting in a box somewhere, and maybe someday you'll get to them. Jill, thank you very much for calling in. Gary Pajot, I know we only have you for another minute here. Your sense of where all this is headed, do you see digital images becoming more and more the language of communication rather than the thing on the wall, or are they going to be doing both?
Well, back in the 80s, when word processors came into vogue, really kind of created the opportunity for many, many people to get involved with, sharing their stories and their memories
sure.
and their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And photography has now reached that point where it's now part of the that dialogue. And it's healthy. People are going to be more involved in their pictures, and that overall, as a way to communicate their ideas and their experiences, is going to be valuable, because some people just are not text-based people.
some people are visual people, and they really haven't had the chance to communicate visually as they would like to.
And now they can really, really sing. Gary Pageau at the Photo Marketing Association in Jackson, Michigan, thanks for joining us.
No, thank you.
We've got to take a short break here. We're talking about the onslaught of digital photography and how it's changing the way Americans take, use, share, and value pictures. Are you capturing memories more or less effectively in the digital age? And how is digital photography changing our relationship with images and with each other? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at babsoncapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the onslaught of digital photography, how it's changing the way we make and keep memories, how it's changing the way we think about what is photo-worthy. We're joined this hour by Christopher Burkett, nature photographer for the past 30 years, uses only film, not digital, joins us from Portland, Oregon, and from Williamsburg, Virginia, Dr. Ellen Rudolph, a psychologist and photojournalist. You can join us as well. How is digital photography changing our relationship with images and each other? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Connie is calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. Hi, Connie. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't know if you remember me from Star Island, but...
great to hear from you.
Yes. Couple of points to make. One is I've been an amateur digital and film photographer forever, and I was briefly a professional photographer. And I use both. I use film and digital, depending on the circumstances. I've long had a film darkroom, and now I have a wonderful digital darkroom. There's an old saying about photographers that there's a difference between good and bad photographers, and the difference is that the good photographers throw away the bad pictures.
Right.
And I would encourage people who are into digital photography. You mentioned the boxes that people go through when there's an event that they want to recall.
That they used to have boxes of paper, prints, just
sure.
Waiting
and
from
got,
film
listen,
photography.
I have shelves and shelves and shelves. I've run out of places to put them. I'm dating back, really, 35 years. My kids when they were little, everything. But you can do the same thing with a lot of good programs are out there now. They don't cost very much. They're very simple to use, and you can archive your digital photos on CDs or DVDs,
right.
Whatever your computer has.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes an equally valid way of going through the shoebox, as it were.
Connie, may I ask you, when you look through the viewfinder, is there a difference in your mental process, if it's film you're using or digital? Do you have a more throwaway attitude from the get-go if it's digital?
Well, yes. And the nice thing about the digital, of course, I do a lot of very extreme close-up photography,
mm-hmm.
Even greater than life size, of things that people don't even know exist because they're so small. And the lighting is really tricky. So I'll often have my digital camera take a couple of shots, get an idea of how I want the lighting, and then do it with film, because the film provides, I'm not wealthy enough to have the super, super, super high-resolution digital cameras.
Right.
The best I have is a 6-megapixel
mm-hmm.
Low-end digital SLR. So I then switch to my film camera, knowing that I'm going to get a much more perfected image. So in some ways, I use digital as a tool, but in other ways, when I'm taking photographs of kids, people, friends, I use the digital camera, and you can get prints made quite easily. You can take them to the local photo shop, to the pharmacy.
Sure, sure.
Print them yourself.
And don't forget, you're reminding us how deeply and well they can be archived, so those boxes don't need to be quite the chaos that the old photographs have been.
Right, and I'm one of these people who I can lay my hands on any negative or slide I've taken in the last 35 years in about a half an hour. I'm super organized. It's the only part of my life that is organized is my photographs. So,
Connie, come over to my place. I've got boxes I need you to go to work on. It's good to hear your voice, Connie. Thanks so much for calling in. Christopher Burkett, I wish you'd speak to this point that Connie raises about the essential quality of the images that are captured here. Now, maybe the digital image is becoming the fluid new language of communication, but when we sit and really look deeply at a photograph, describe for us the difference in what can be achieved in terms of depth and, as Sontag might have it, you know, what we can bring up out of an image, out of a scene with these two technologies.
Well, that's actually a really good point. The if you're using film and, you know, doing, again, top-end printing and things like that, there is a subtlety and a depth to the image that I don't, like I said, can't be achieved any other way. Subtle colors, incredible tonal quality.
Why can't that be achieved digitally?
Well, it's, of course, there's probably a lot of listeners that may dispute this, but it's pretty difficult to take an image and fracture it into a bazillion pieces and then reassemble it and pretend that nothing has happened.
And that's the pixel path.
That's a pixel path, yeah. And with, again, especially large format film, there's a real cohesiveness to the image and a real depth, like I say, not only tones and sharpness, but just a overall organic quality to it that I haven't seen in any even high-end digital printing. Now, of course, we're talking about high-end compared to high-end, but still there's just a you know, and again, good photography is all about subtlety, and that's what makes the image come to life.
So, Ellen Rudolph, if there are nuances and subtleties that get lost in digital photography, and it's the new language, you know, are we simply hearing less? Are we getting less depth in that communication in the same way that that words, if they used only a tiny fraction, if we use only a tiny fraction of the language, don't succeed in communicating reality quite as deeply either.
Well, it may be the difference between a absolutely fantastic novel, a book that grabs your attention, and a classic, or even a university-based technical journal. They're doing very different things. The public is benefiting more and learning more from the the digital, in the sense that it's acquainting them better with the world around them. So, hey, they're not photographers. None of them probably are even artists per se, or they would be photographers, you know, or artists. But it is changing how they see the world around them, and it's so, in that sense, it's very educational.
And they are certainly communicators in the way that all humans
are.
Very
much.
Guy is calling from Chatham, Massachusetts. Hi, Guy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm a longtime photographer, and I read a lot of publications. And a few years back, I read an article by a photojournalist who was taking digital photographs at a Clinton presidential event.
Yeah.
And he saved all his images. He archived it. And a few months after that, the Monica Lewinsky story broke. And he thought to himself, my face. He went back through his images, and he found an image of Monica Lewinsky hugging Clinton.
The famous image? Is that the famous image that we've all seen where she's got the beret on?
Yes, that's the one.
Oh, my gosh.
He saved all his images, and he managed to go back through. So the message is, even though you're shooting digital, save it all, because there are DVDs out there and CDs. You can archive, and you don't want to erase anything. And when I went digital, I kept the lesson in mind, and I saved everything, all my images, even the blurry ones.
Right, right. Guy, you're breaking up on us, but we've got the essential point. And Ellen Rudolph, Guy's saying, look, with the ocean of images being taken, in a way, if they're archived adequately, there's almost nothing we can't go back and look at after the fact these days.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I wish that, you know, the market, the industry would tell consumers more about is that they need to stop wanting the lowest prices cameras with the highest quality. Go for broke. If you want to take good pictures, you have to have more megapixels, for example, and higher quality zooms, optical zooms. So you got to pay a little more. And then don't worry about the printing. You can now go to tons of online services and make archival prints that are going to be great into the future. You cannot do that on your desktop for the most part.
And once everyone's equipped with that kind of depth of memory, we're going to have a sort of a virtual recreation
of the world, yes. Even visually, living right alongside the other. Well, talk about another memory. We talked last week about the Internet becoming a global mind. Here
yes.
we've got even a global image memory. I want to get another call while we have time, if I may, Ellen
sure.
and Christopher.
Sure.
Anne is calling from Duxbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a professional wedding photographer,
and I
do shoot digitally for other functions and family groups and things, but for the weddings, I shoot film. But what I'm finding this year, everyone I know has all the professionals, their business is way down.
Now, why is that?
Well, people are saying that it's way over their budget, and to me, I mean, $2,500 over their budget was hard to understand. So lately, what I've been hearing at weddings, I'm hearing all these horror stories of from the bridesmaids, mostly of people who are hiring people with great digital cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Who know nothing about shooting weddings. And what's happening is they're going out and they're shooting 1,000 pictures and giving them everything for $200 or $500.
Right, right.
But what's happening is that they're up on the altar, they're pushing priests and ministers, they're forgetting, it's like they're in a virtual wedding, and they're forgetting that they're blocking the parents.
It's a kind of video game. I mean, maybe when everyone has a digital camera, the wedding parties are saying, who needs a photographer? Everyone's a photographer these days.
That's exactly what's happening.
Film photographers do that, too.
Yes, of course, film photographers clamber around, but it might have been a smaller coterie that might have learned a little better manner. So, Anne, where do you think it's headed? Are we still going to have ritualized photography of special events, or is it going to be totally democratized, people crawling on the dais?
Right, and what's happening is that for the first time I'm hearing from in the Catholic churches, no pictures, period. And I've been shooting for 18 years. I've done 700 weddings.
Wow, and that's a picture. Our time is short, but we appreciate your sharing that with us. Christopher Burkett, there's a picture. I mean, we've talked a lot. We've raised Susan Sontag through this hour, but, of course, she said that the ultimate promise in photography was to democratize all experiences by translating them into images. Even the most sacred moments, Anne is saying, they're becoming kind of image free-for-alls.
Yeah, well, that is a danger, and again, that has mostly to do with bad behavior other than the photographic equipment that you're using. one point I think we should make, too,
yeah.
is that in terms of archiving all these images, is that prints are actually still a very good idea, because even if you put things on a CD or DVD or other storage mm-hmm. device, you don't know 30 years from now whether you're going to be able to retrieve that information at all.
Right, like your old beta videotapes, there may be nowhere to play them.
Yeah, your old 5.5-inch floppy disks.
Right. Ellen Rudolph, last word goes to you this hour. You describe it as a new communication medium. So are we really building another layer of our communications life through all these images, beyond what we had even in the era of film?
Well, I think we are. Actually, frankly, I think the digital domain is rescuing photography. The art world has, made photographers non-artists for many years. And now the public is coming in to our rescue, and they're having huge fun with photography.
They sure are.
I love it.
And the number of images just growing higher and higher, almost
that's right.
A mirror to the planet.
I say go
for
it.
Well, there's the onward and upward voice. Ellen Rudolph, psychologist and photojournalist, it's been wonderful having you with us this hour.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And Christopher Burkett, nature photographer, a man who's still devoted to his film. Wonderful to have your insights. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Listeners, we've mentioned Susan Sontag and her writing on photography this hour. She's no longer with us, but she did join On Point a few years ago. You can listen to that show on our website at onpointradio.org. In a moment, Ansel Adams on the language of photography. This is On Point. From film to flashcards, photography and technology have always been intimately related. The greatest photographers were also master technicians in the darkroom, and none more so than Ansel Adams. Born in 1902, Adams' sweeping eye and meticulous technique captured the grandeur of the American West on film. His photographs of Yosemite and the Grand Tetons have become visual icons. He shot on 8x10-inch film, printed in the darkroom using a metronome for a timer, and pushed the bounds of photography as far as mid-20th century technology could go. Adams died in 1984, but Karen Huss, curator of a new Ansel Adams exhibit at Boston's Museum of Fine Arts, says that had Adams lived to see the digital age, he would have been a master of the megapixel.
He was very much an early adopter of new technologies, and he very early on came up with the idea of drying his prints to see how they'd look in the end, testing them out and drying them in the microwave oven. He was always very interested in pushing the limits and finding how to make the creative and technical ways of making the prints that he visualized. So I really do think it would have been exactly the sort of thing he would have been fascinated by.
But for Adams, technology and technique were only half of the formula for a perfect photograph. The other half, vision, emotion, spirit. So we'll close this hour with Ansel Adams himself from a 1976 interview describing his early work and how he came to learn what he called the language of photography.
After 1916, at the age of 14, I went to Yosemite Valley in the Sierra Nevada of California and was deeply affected and infected with the grandeur of the scene. For many, many years, I climbed and explored and photographed. And it was interesting that my first pictures were records of my experiences and what I had seen. While I progressed in the photography, they became more intimate in interpretation. I was finally getting something in the pictures about what I felt, the emotional experience of being in this era. As I progressed in my work, it became clear to me that photography was a language. To lump it all together would be as foolish as saying that all literature is the same. It is a visual language. And I think we can go back to one of the great English poets, Coleridge, who said, and perhaps I'm paraphrasing this to a bit, that all art is the expression of both the external and the internal. In photography, we have a peculiar situation in that the subject itself can be highly emotional, and it can be both emotional and interesting and informative, and a record can be made. And I think one of the finest descriptions of this process was uttered by Alfred Stieglitz. He said, "I go out into the world, and I recognize something that has emotional and aesthetic meaning to me. Then I show you that photograph. You can reject it because you don't understand it. You can accept it because perhaps something in it catches your fancy." And that made no difference to him at all. The important thing was, did it excite through the clarity and intensity of expression? Did it excite him to go out and to see, visualize, and create an equivalent of his own creative experience? And I think that that is probably the finest explanation of what the creative photograph can be.
Photographer Ansel Adams speaking in 1976. For more information on his work, visit our website, onpointradio.org. And for our listeners in the Boston area, a major new exhibition of some of Adams' work opens at the Museum of Fine Arts on August 21st. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.